And we have with us Mr. Gautam Sachdeva, who is a spiritual guide and an author. He also guides people about how to live a peaceful and mindful life every day. What do you think, is there an Indian philosophy that a person who is not aware of Indian philosophy but can take some learning from Indian philosophy?
You see, an ancient philosophy is the philosophy of Advaita, which means not to, a Dvait. Through the lens of Advaita, the seeing is a bit different. Not happiness, because happiness comes and goes, as we all know.
Right.
But a happiness which stays with one all the time, irrespective of what happens in life. Try hard to break one's patterns, makes them more hard to break.
Yeah. So what is the key? Forget to forget.
Yes, it is truly the key.
And Japan philosophies, that is very much famous these days, is Ikigai.
Yes.
A lot of Indians and a lot of Europeans and Americans have read a book called Ikigai. What is spirituality and what is peace for people who are not in the path of, in the conventional religion or spiritualism that we talk about? Good evening, everyone. I'm Supriya Singh. I'm speaking from Chennai today. And we have with us Mr. Gautam Sachdeva, who is a spiritual guide and an author. He also guides people about how to live a peaceful and mindful life every day. Gautam, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Pleasure is mine, Supriya. Thank you.
Can you briefly introduce yourself and tell us what is your main philosophy that you tell people about or write about?
Well, I'll come to the second part, which is more important. I only speak about peace of mind in daily living.
Okay.
In other words, true happiness. Not happiness, because happiness comes and goes, as we all know.
Right.
But a happiness which stays with one all the time. Irrespective of what happens in life. And that is true happiness. So that's what I speak.
Understood. Now, we all live a very busy life, you know. I have friends who are engineers. I have friends who are graphic designers. I am on a spiritual side, but my friends are not. How can we tell people who are not on the path of spirituality, how can they practice that they can have a peaceful mind and life, everyday life?
Well, you see, everyone is on the path of spirituality.
Okay.
Many people don't know it. Life is always teaching us lessons. Like, for example, we know that pleasures are transient. We find something, we get very happy. It could be an object, a car, a watch or whatever. And then we are bored of it. And then we seek the next pleasure and the next. So life is constantly showing us something, which is that happiness is not to be found in objects. When we realize that, that is the spiritual path. Because we now look for the deeper meanings in life and not these things which give us temporary happiness.
Right.
So everyone is on this journey, whether they know it or not.
Whether they recognize it or not.
When it becomes conscious, that is the spiritual journey.
Right.
When the quest really moves, as I said, from happiness to true happiness, what is that which does not come and go? That is the spiritual journey.
Okay. We'll come to that. I live in Japan, and Japan philosophies that is very much famous these days is Ikigai.
Yes.
A lot of Indians and a lot of Europeans and Americans have read a book called Ikigai, which is, you know, living a life that makes you happy and is also ethical at the same time. What do you think, is there an Indian philosophy that a person who is not aware of Indian philosophy but can take some learning from Indian philosophy?
You see, an ancient philosophy is the philosophy of Advaita, which means not to, a Dvait.
Right.
Now, to simplify it, let's look at it this way. In a kitchen, you have various gadgets. You have the fridge, the toaster, you have the mixer grinder. But they only come alive and perform their function when electricity is running through them.
Right.
So while they appear as separate objects, it is the same electricity functioning through all the gadgets which brings about what they are supposed to do.
Hmm.
So the toaster will produce toast because of electricity. The juicer will produce juice because of electricity. Similarly, we all are powered by the same consciousness. But we are conditioned to see other people as separate objects without realizing that a fundamental core is the same. It is the same electricity which animates us. Otherwise, we'd all be dead bodies.
Right.
So this philosophy takes us beyond what these physical eyes see to what is within this person is the same as what is within me.
Hmm.
So appears as two, but not two.
Right.
This really helps because when we start understanding this, our relationship with the other, which is very competitive and mostly in conflict, it is a me versus the other. I live my life in this dynamic, whether at work, even with friends, I'm always trying to impress a friend or saying something which is better, or whatever it is. So this me versus the other gets healed to me and the other.
Right.
Because it's the fundamental quality of both of us is the same.
Hmm.
That is Advaita. So I would say that is an expression of Ikigai.
Right.
In Japanese culture is Advaita in this. Because that is where my peace is to be found.
My peace and also what I may enjoy. When I'm happy every day, then only I can enjoy what I do also.
And I can only be happy if my relationships are harmonious.
Right.
Now, there are three kinds of relationships.
Yeah.
My relationship with people in my life, from the closest family, friends, colleagues, or the stranger on the road.
Hmm.
Life is about relationships. Secondly, my relationship with what happens in my life, that's also a relationship.
Right.
Pleasure or pain, what is my relationship to pleasure? What is my relationship to pain? And thirdly, my relationship with myself.
Right.
Am I at peace with myself? Do I accept myself the way I am? That's a relationship.
Hmm.
So when our relationships are harmonious, we find we are more and more at peace. So this quest for peace is actually a very beautiful quest because everyone is on it. Who wants to lead a life of conflict, of condemning people, judging people, hating people? That's what takes away one's peace.
Right.
So rediscovering this peace is the spiritual journey.
You know, I recently interviewed a kid from Hiroshima, a 12-year-old kid. His great-grandmother is an atomic bomb survivor. He's only 12 years old. And he does tour of Hiroshima Atomic Bomb Peace Memorial Park in English. But Japan is a nation where Japanese is their, you know, main language. And if you want to read something, it may be difficult to have at least even verbal. At least verbal communication in English is still rare in Japan. But he does that service. He's only 12, volunteering. And he was telling me, I want everyone to be happy and in peace and love themselves. Mm. He's only 12. And I asked him, you know, why adults can't do it.
Yes.
And he told me because adults think too much.
So true.
Now, I'm coming to that. You said your relationship with oneself is very important.
Yes.
Right. Now, to get better, we're in this constant fight about, am I right? Did I did right? Was I wrong? If you are right, you are sort of inclined. Your first thought is, was that person right? You know, we subconsciously judge ourselves and others. And to get better, we have to undo the bad and do the good more, right? Mm. How do we make peace of mind? Like, how do we keep peace of mind there and get better and make our relationship with ourselves important? Because I think once we are only at peace with ourselves, then only we can be good with others.
So you see, it's a very good question you have asked because through the lens of Advaita, the seeing is a bit different.
Right.
Let me explain. When I see someone behaving a certain way, and instead of judging them too quickly, I realize that whatever they say and do is based on how they were conditioned, how their parents treated them, how society treated them, what values they were given. it is through that conditioning that people operate, just like myself.
Hmm.
So when I see that a person is playing out a script, one could say, or has a blueprint through which they are operating, I no longer hate the person because I realize that I have my own script.
Yes.
So when I accept the other person, let's say they have a point of view different from mine, so I'm not in conflict. I allow them the privilege of having a point of view which is different from mine.
Yes.
Because it's their expression based on their condition.
Yes.
Then I find I'm more and more at peace with them and myself. Because I am more at peace with the way I have been conditioned.
Right.
By factors beyond my control, they have shaped me, made me think a certain way. So I no longer go on a guilt trip or blame game, blaming myself for doing things which have disturbed my peace. I just see this, there's a kind of a hand above us, above the people I interact with and myself, which is really guiding the show. When I accept this, that everyone is shaped by the one source consciousness, which is what Advaita is about, not two, as I said, one source consciousness, it truly brings about a peace in my relationships with others and myself.
Right.
It's very beautiful, actually.
And that 10 seconds or 20 seconds judgment that happens, we should forget it. Because it will come.
Because we are conditioned.
So it is okay
so it
to...
It takes time.
And it is very difficult to break our patterns.
You see, it is, and to try hard to break one's patterns makes them more hard to break.
Yeah. So what is the key? Forget to forget.
Yes, it is truly the key. To just accept that there is a flow. You know, my spiritual guide, when he was asked what is the purpose of life, he kept it very simple. He didn't use big words like liberation, self-realization. He said the purpose of life is to let life flow.
Hmm.
You see, we are our biggest obstacles.
Yes.
That is the problem.
How do we not become our biggest obstacles?
By this, what we have just spoken about, of course, in a very brief way.
Right.
When we really see that there's a power which makes us breathe, right?
Right.
We don't do breathing.
Of course.
A power makes blood run through the veins.
Right.
We don't do it.
Right.
There is a power called gravity which makes us stick to the earth, otherwise we'd be floating off.
Right.
The earth is rotating at a speed, revolving around the sun at a speed. Are we in charge of that?
We are not.
So there's so much we are not in charge of. So we realize there's a higher power and we could call it by any name. Someone would say God, someone would say the source, someone would say consciousness. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's a name.
Hmm.
But there's a power beyond me.
Hmm.
So when I start seeing that the me I thought is so important in my life is really not, it's just one piece of the puzzle, then that's when I discover peace.
Hmm.
That there's something which knows what it's doing, obviously, which is making my heart beat. That's not me. That is what children have, this quality of being simple. See, the child has not got a developed ego. The child cannot judge. The ego, the adult ego judges.
Yes.
So the ego is the troublemaker.
Right.
We are children grown up.
Right.
The child is still in us.
Right.
That pure being which never judged and just was this bundle of joy is still there.
Right.
But the veil of the ego, the veil of separation, trying to fight and survive in this tough world and be seen and heard, this is who I am, is what is causing the suffering.
Okay. And to practice, I mean, this, the final goal, I would say, or the everyday mindfulness should be to be able to see each other as coming from one source. But if we talk about everyday peace, I pray that gives me peace. My partner is so much into nature. He's a different, blissful person when he's in nature. That is his spirituality. My brother is really into music. I think that is his spirituality. My another friend loves climbing. He finds his peace there. So what is spirituality and what is peace for people who are not in the path of in the conventional religion or spiritualism that we talk about?
See, what you have described is brilliant.
Okay.
Because in all instances, there's only one thing common. We are enjoying the activity, whether it is music or rock climbing or whatever, when our thinking mind is absent.
Right.
The thinking mind is the mind which is living in the dead past or an imaginary future. In all these instances you have mentioned, there's just the joy of doing an activity.
Right.
So we use the example often of a surgeon conducting an operation. He's skilled, he's qualified, and he's the best surgeon to be employed for that surgery. So what he will do is bring his years of experience to the surgery, because his working mind is sharp. It's in the moment, what we call mindfulness.
Mm.
Very attentive, very aware. But supposing his colleague tells him 10 minutes before the surgery, hey, be careful, because this person is a very important politician and your career could be ruined if he doesn't like you or something goes wrong. Now the surgeon's thinking mind activates.
Right.
An imaginary future which could have dire consequences as far as I'm concerned. Just like someone mountain climbing, if the thinking mind is active, it's dangerous for them. It can be fatal. They have to be so much in the working mind. They have to be so attentive. So I find my peace when the thinking mind is absent.
Off.
That is the troublemaker. So these are activities which they are joyful because they dissolve the thinking mind.
Okay.
Music, creativity, art, nature. Nature does not have a thinking mind.
It does.
Trees don't have a thinking mind. Birds don't have a thinking mind. The river does not have a thinking mind. That's why we enjoy it. You are in an urban city like Chennai, Tokyo, Mumbai, whatever it is. Can you imagine the number of thinking minds in that city? All thinking about the dead past or an imaginary future, that's the vibration. And so these are very beautiful therapies, I would call them, actually, to free oneself of this egoic mind. That is where peace is to be found. But you can't go mountain climbing all your life every
day. So what do we do then?
So it has to be found through life.
Through life.
You see, the Buddha, there's a statement of his, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti. The world is following the wheel of time, suffering, happiness, whatever, round and round. Samsara is dukkha, pleasure and pain, so on. Nirvana is peace, shanti is peace. But he adds, they are not two. Means, peace has to be found through the samsara, not away from it.
Okay.
You can't be painting all the time. You can't be
meditating all the time.
So through your challenges, through your life situations, the peace has to be found through that. That is the spiritual journey.
When you say that, do you mean we have to accept what is there and make peace with it?
We have to accept that something has happened because it's happened.
Right.
It's too late not to accept it.
Right.
Thereafter, we do precisely that we think and feel we should do.
Okay.
But most of us, we resist what has happened.
Right.
And our energy goes in resisting what has already happened, which is quite pointless because it has happened. I'm faced with a challenge. It's already come my way. Now my peace will depend on my attitude to the challenge.
Right.
But most people suffer the fact that the challenge happened. So the next step does not happen because they are mired in doubt, self-pity, self-hate. Why did I do this? Why me? Why me? The one on the spiritual journey will cross that hurdle, but yet has to deal with the situation and will deal with it with a clear mind, the working mind, the objective mind. So this comes to the attitude in life.
So accept, do what you should have been or could have been doing. Or would have done, and do it and accept and just flow.
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow. One more thing. I was teaching, I mean, I'm not great at any meditation, but my friends really wanted to learn. And they're not religious, of course, so I cannot exactly teach them. But I do focus on my heartbeat. And I tried to teach them that, and it took them some time. But it was very surprising that one of them could instantly feel the beat here. She couldn't feel it here. And she said, I could never focus on breath. When people asked me to focus on breathing, she could never do it. But she could feel the beat here, and she could very much, you know, feel peace. So is there any practice that one could do just to have hold of your mind or have few peaceful moments? Because, you know, not every day we can go for climb.
See, there are different techniques. There are different practices. Now, what you described, you know, the oximeters which you put here.
Yes.
They can read the pulse. What is the pulse but the heart?
Right.
Heartbeat.
Right.
So that is what she sensed, because she became sensitive when she sat.
Right.
Gave time to herself. The thinking mind got disengaged. Right. And so you can feel subtle things like this.
Right.
See, you led them to focus on the heart, which basically also means away from the mind, right?
Right.
So it was a shift.
Again, it was a shift from thinking mind to working mind, being in the moment.
Yes.
Okay.
So breath work, focusing on the breath works for some people.
Right.
There are different techniques. Even this, there is an ancient Indian tradition of meditation where you focus on a flame in the heart.
Right.
That's a technique. So there are many techniques. The technique of Advaita is actually a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
It is to allow whatever happens in the meditation without judging it.
Mm-hmm.
So even if thoughts come, random thoughts about work, there's no this judge sitting all the time and judging people, judging myself, judging the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like witnessing the mind doing its stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, I separate from that stream of thinking.
Mm.
Because there's a witness who knows that all this is happening. So this kind of meditation is different. Some people need techniques because it helps them. So as the saying goes, different strokes for different folks.
Right, right. Just one last thing. Let's talk about Japan. Japanese people are very cultural people. So I see them and I feel very good when they pass by a shrine. Many of them would bow down, you know. They don't have a religion per se. They have Shintoism and Buddhism. And for them, work is their religion. Like, dharma is their religion. But I still feel that there's a lot of separation of thoughts and emotions in that society. A bit stoic in a way. And I want to help people, you know, and I talk, but, you know, sometimes talking has no solution. You can only hear what they say. So what is the way for people in a society where expression is not, you know, easily, like they don't express very easily? How can they find peace of mind?
See, it is harder for them.
Mm.
Suppression in any form is, you know, it's like the bubble can burst at some point.
Mm.
When you suppress things, it gets built up. The energy charge at one point can overwhelm.
Right.
But if that is the cultural conditioning, it is so. But to break through that, any form of meditation, any form of mindfulness, it will surely be of help.
Right.
You see, because these are old conditioned patterns, and here we have a collective conditioning of a society which is at work. It is like the famous author Eckhart Tolle says, women also have the collective conditioning of being persecuted worldwide.
Right.
It's a huge mountain to carry, you know, but this compounds the suffering. Suppression compounds the suffering.
Right.
And then we seek temporary relief from them through alcohol or this or that. All temporary.
Eating
because
sweets.
We are back to the same patterns.
Hmm.
So, in fact, anyone in any culture, any society, if they know that it is suppressed, all the more reason they must explore the spiritual dimension.
Mm.
Whatever appeals to them on social media, whatever it is, something where they can find this deep well of peace, they must tap into it. That is their source of relief.
Okay.
See, people know whether they are suppressing things or not.
Mm.
We all know the truth inside us. Everybody knows it.
Mm.
And they would benefit the most from a spiritual practice.
Which in their mind is not probably spirituality, but it is in a way spirituality.
And I'd like to end on one note. You said how they bow down, right?
Yeah,
shrines.
Yeah. Yes.
What is actually happening is you are bowing down to a higher power,
yes,
you could say.
Yes.
Which is a great thing, because this ego is so strong, it will not bow down to other people.
Yes.
To a shrine you don't mind, because there's no ego there.
Right.
actually what's happening is you are bowing down to a higher being, your higher self, whatever you may call it, because there's reverence for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful act.
Yes.
If it's done in awareness, because right. It's like a surrender
right.
that there's something which is more powerful than me, the limited ego.
Okay.
It's very beautiful.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anything else you would like to add? Or
I would just like to wish everyone a life of peace, equanimity, calm and tranquility. And these are gifts which are available to all. And even if there's a slight wish for peace in one's life, you can rest assured that the universe will come to support that wish to fructify.
Oh, beautiful. We wish you all a peaceful week, day, month, life. If you want to read more about Gautam, please, he has a website. He has written so many books. Go and explore. See you next time.
Thank you.